So let me tell you what some of the stories are that you need to know about today, and I'm going to show them to you as well, or at least clips here at the beginning. Hungary says that they're going to arrest Netanyahu. Bulgaria sides with Russia. And President Trump chooses more war.
Moto Vesotoska, vacate your engine room. We're prepared to subject you to disabling fire.
Europe has fallen a victim to its own ambition to be a moral leader in a world without rules.
Is something that Goebbels or the North Korean leadership would admire. Not a single true word being spoken. I'm going to immediately suspend this false news that is being spread here.
No doubt that Europe is seriously preparing for a major war against Russia.
Those are important moments. We're going to share some of these stories, and we're also going to have a visit right here from a very important member of the European Union who's going to be joining us on the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want you to know that Bulgaria is in the news with a new incoming prime minister, and he is no friend of the old European order, nor of European elites. His name is Ruman Radev, and he is part of a new breed, really, of Europeans who say they're just tired of the old ways, and especially tired of being told what to say and being told what to do by the European Union, the EU. Radev says it's time for Europeans, his words, to deploy something they haven't deployed in a long time, critical thinking.
You should know that Bulgaria will pay efforts to continue its European path, but believe me, strong Bulgaria in strong Europe needs critical thinking, needs pragmatism, because Europe has fallen a victim to its own ambition to be a moral leader in a world without rules.
Yeah, so this guy's really given it to Brussels, and what he seems to be displaying is this fracture that's taking place in Europe right now between people who think like him and others who go along to get along, as we say in America. RT correspondent Yasim Ekin is in Bulgaria right now. He's following what this new incoming prime minister has been doing and saying as well. And he's good enough to join us now from the capital city of Sofia. Thanks so much for joining us. What, you know, I'm thinking as I listen to him, how many others like him exist in Europe? And what are you making of how he has come to this thought process that he's now displaying for the whole world to see?
Oh, good question. Depending on how we approach it, it differs. As to how many people are out there, it's unclear because Ruman Radev is his own man, but he's being dubbed the new coming of Viktor Orban, these labels that paint him in a very specific light, which may not be very accurate. Mm. So Radev actually has an interesting background. His position is specifically focuses on Bulgaria, putting Bulgaria first, especially its foreign policy, having an independent and sovereign foreign policy outside of Brussels. And let's not forget, this man served as president in Bulgaria since 2017, before he resigned earlier this year to run for these elections. And before we get into the itty-gritty of the specific details, let's not forget that until this man won these elections, the last time Bulgaria actually witnessed any political figure or party to win these elections with a majority government was in 1997, when Ivan Kostov led the Democratic Front and ultimately served until 2001. And since then, there have been elections time and time again, governments not serving their periods in full. And the up-and-runner Boyko Borisov served as prime minister three times over a 20-year period, but only completed his term once. So besides everything else, it seems like this man promises some sort of political stability above everything else.
Is it about the people there thinking also, we need a guy like this? Because we're just tired of tens of billions of our dollars going to wars in the Middle East and wars in Ukraine, and nobody's checking with us, and maybe we don't want to be a part of this whole EU thing. Maybe we just want to worry about ourselves. Maybe it should be about Bulgaria first, right?
That is the incentive, yes. And I spoke to a lot of Bulgarians, especially some of my colleagues that have been working here in Sofia. And anyone or everyone I've spoken to did not actually support Ruman Radev. They did not vote for him. But the one thing they all can say is this man promises something different. And that difference is just might actually make the difference. Yeah. But again, Ruman Radev has an interesting background. A lot of people label him as this pro-Russia figure, which outside of his anti-Ukraine rhetoric, again, just to simplify the argument, there's nothing that suggests he is pro-Russia. He served as the chief of Bulgaria's Air Force and was a NATO general.
But you know what it is? You and I live in a world right now where you can't be Russia neutral, you can't be Russia friendly. The only term that exists right now anywhere in the vernacular in this world is pro-Russia or Putin apologist. In other words, you can't have a conversation with a Russian without being called a name. Isn't that sad?
Sad, yes, of course. But I've just been trying to think about whether or not the Turkish president has been labeled as pro-Russian, given his, attempt at balancing relations with the West or the East, whatever it may be. But I don't recall the Turkish president being named pro-Russian for his stance or his pragmatism with working with Russia, was he?
No, that's a great point. But Trump is. If Trump has a conversation with Putin, they make fun of him and say he's a Putin lackey, right?
Yeah, that is an aspect. Another aspect I want to focus on, again, is that Radev is, he's a very interesting figure. Yeah. There are a lot of people in Bulgaria that don't know much about him, really. But again, let's not forget, this man was a NATO general. So to suggest he's anti-Europe would be, well, inaccurate above everything else.
maybe even stupid.
I mean, yes, I guess. In other words, I'm trying to be a little politically correct here, just as an outsider in Bulgaria.
It's a fascinating topic, and I'm so glad you're there. I picked up the papers this morning as I was preparing this newscast, and the first thing I saw was that, and I said, we've got to do this story. What the hell is going on in Bulgaria? So I'm glad you're there for us, Yassine. Great job, man. I'm so happy you were there to report this for us, and good work, my friend.
My pleasure, Rick.
Meanwhile, let me tell you about something else. Russia's representative to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia, you've known him, you've seen him. He absolutely laid into the EU on his own terms in a carefully prepared speech, or really a takedown of the EU leaders like Kaya Kallas, who was right there in front of him when he was saying this, by the way. He was basically looking at her and saying, you know, you. But he did it very politely, of course, as he spoke. Nebenzia explained how it is and why that European leaders create and maintain a constant state of war with Russia, though Russia has repeatedly reached out. But, you know, it seems like every time the Russians reach out to the Europeans, right, they're either refuted, attacked, or threatened. It's the strangest damn thing. Nebenzia told leaders from around the world gathered at the UN that if they want to know why Europe is always talking about a war with Russia or planning a war with Russia or seemingly wanting to go to war with Russia, all you really have to do is follow the money.
The EU continues to do everything it can to further escalate the conflict in Ukraine, including by aggressively supplying the Kiev regime with weapons and military equipment. Meanwhile, fearing President Trump's displeasure, European bureaucrats and their Ukrainian proxies verbally support the United States mediation initiatives. However, in reality, they sabotage the implementation of any realistic agreements. The official goal is to increase Europe's defense capability by 2030. These large-scale military preparations leave no doubt that Europe is seriously preparing for a major war against Russia.
Why? Because they talk to defense contractors and they owe them money, essentially. That's what he's saying, that they're doing this for the defense contractors. But you know, by the way, who is truly staking his position these days in the news? the guy that I'm about to show you, somebody. He's the new incoming PM of Hungary. He recently defeated, as you probably know, Viktor Orban. There's this video that I'm going to be showing of you, of him. He's angrily sparring with a reporter. It's the strangest thing. I mean, this guy just took office, and the first thing he does is he's fighting with the media. But I mean vociferously fighting with the media. He's attacking her for her coverage of him in the past, you know, and he's telling her what it's all about. And he's now also saying that he's going to cancel that TV station, that it's a public news network, and he's going to cancel them because they've had what he calls blatant bias against him. Watch.
Ti képviselő a kérdőszeretettel.
Bocsánat, ön olyan embereket idéz, akiknek semmilyen relevanciájuk nincsen.
Azt mondta, hogy egyelőre nem
még
időszerű, és
mondom,
most le is
még
vették.
Mondom,
bocsásson meg, le is
azt,
vették most napirend.
Ön félrevezeti az embereket.
Olyan, én nem olyan vezetem embereket, félre, ez elmondta, ott volt a híradásokban, nem csak
de
a miénkben. A zöld párti képviselő
de, semmi, de neki nincs
arról, beszélt,
asszonyom,
hogy egyelőre...
Ön azt mondja, mintha Toroszkai László mondanám, semmilyen hatáskörre nincs a dologban.
Rendben, de ezért ne velem vitatkozzon, én csak azt tudom mondani, amit elmondtak az európai
parlamenti képviselők.
Nem a propagandát nyomom, az Európai Bizottság így reagál, vagy az Európai Parlament tegnap így reagált erre. Én felteszem a kérdést önnek ezzel kapcsolatban.
Egy perccel ön... állít egy hazugságot, és nem hagyja, hogy válaszoljak. Megengedi, hogy válaszoljak?
Én nem állítok egy hazugságot.
Megengedi, hogy válaszoljak?
Bárki megnézheti a híradóban, ez lement. Azt kikérem magamnak,
több mint egy perccel beszél szerkesztőasszony, másfél év után jutottam be ide a közmédiába.
Wow, you don't have to speak Hungarian to know that those two are going after each other. And they're go- I mean, it was relentless. I watched this. It went on for like 10 minutes. And by the way, this new prime minister, Magyar, his anger is not just confined to the media. This Hungarian politician is also saying that he will undo Viktor Orban's friendly policy toward Israel and will instead arrest Mr. Netanyahu were he to visit Hungary once again. Here's basically what he's saying is, if a country is a member of the ICC, right, and a person who is wanted by the ICC, the International Criminal Court, enters its territory, then that person, he says, has to be taken into custody. Meanwhile, in the Persian Gulf, the United States has escalated the war, ending what was beginning to look like a break in the fighting for a while. The anticipation, the expectation of some kind of settlement is gone now. Bye-bye, you know, vamos, right? Thanks to what some are calling an act of piracy by U.S. Marines. Look at this video. The Marines attacked civilian ships. Here's a cargo ship basically being seized by the Marines. That's a violation of both the letter and the spirit of international law. Military can't just hit a civilian ship in the middle of the ocean. President Trump, though, is bragging about what these Marines did on Truth Social. Here's his words.
Today, an Iranian-flagged cargo ship named Toska, nearly 900 feet long and weighing almost as much as an aircraft carrier, tried to get past our naval blockade, and it did not go well for them. The U.S. Navy guided missile destroyer USS Spruance intercepted the Toska in the Gulf of Oman and gave them fair warning to stop. The Iranian crew refused to listen, so our Navy ship stopped them right in their tracks by blowing a hole in the engine room. Right now, U.S. Marines have custody of the vessel.
Are they going to do that if the Iranians are using Chinese ships? Or Russian ships? Or Indian ships? This could get interesting. As a matter of fact, it's already interesting. The price of oil spiked once again. I'm looking at it. It's still spiking as I'm watching it, right? LNG also spiked. Price of fertilizer also going up, as are other essentials from the Persian Gulf, which is having a more dire impact on the United States and the world economy than it actually is on Iran. In fact, the truth of the matter is Iran continues to have the upper hand in this situation. Sure, of course, I mean, the United States can show its might, it can deploy the Navy, it can seize or even blow up ships in the Persian Gulf, but if they were to do that, they literally would be doing the opposite of what their stated objective is. The objective, they say, or Mr. Trump says, is to open the Strait of Hormuz. That would block up the Strait of Hormuz. So it doesn't make any sense. Who's calling the shots? Meanwhile, Iran continues to look to the rest of the world, not only as if it's winning the war, but more importantly, like it's calling the shots. Iran has damaged, destroyed every U.S. military installation in Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, all of them. And they say the United States is wasting its time in negotiations. Because the Iranians say the negotiations the United States is bringing, you know, with the vice president and others, is not in good faith. Therefore, they're now saying, we're not going to participate anymore. Just not interested in talking to you guys. You guys aren't serious, right? As Mr. Lavrov always says. Iran also continues to maintain geographic missile, drone, and rocket dominance in the region due to its planning, pre-planning, and its mountainous coastline, which makes it obvious they can shoot down on a very small area. That's the situation at present. And here now, I'm going to let the Belarusian president, Alexander Lukashenko, who I visited with over the weekend, explain the situation for both the United States and for Mr. Trump on his terms. Here, take a listen.
Yes, you destroy schools, you destroy museums, cultural sites, residential buildings, certain power plants and oil fields. You struck them, put them out of commission, destroyed some things, killed some people. You killed Iran's leadership, and that will come back to haunt you. After Venezuela, you showed your face. You killed them, and then what? Others took the place of the leaders who were killed, and they're even more radical. You've stirred up the entire Muslim world, and the people there are tough. Unlike you and I, they will not spare their own lives when it comes to defending their values. So you've stirred up such a hornet's nest that it needs to be calmed as quickly as possible. It must be soothed, concessions need to be made, accommodation has to be shown in some areas, but done in such a way that you're not struck all over the world. Do not think you'll be able to hide behind the ocean. There are Americans all over the world. So things may be calm for you in Washington and Florida, but it will be hard for you in other places.
It's a bold statement, and he's not the only one making it, by the way. So we talked about the United States. We talked about what's going on in Hungary. We talked about Bulgaria. But what about the EU? What's the situation for the EU? What's their position on all of this? What are they going to do, right? What's happening in Europe right now? And are we seeing a fracture inside Europe with different countries, different feelings about what's going on there? Well, after a short break, we're going to delve into this, right? I'm going to be joined in the studio to talk about this with Lubos Blaha. He is a member of the European Union and a man who I think you've come to know him by now because he's visited us before. This guy's not afraid to tell you what he thinks. Don't go away. We'll be right back. So what about the EU? That's the question that we were just asking. And look who's here. Lubos Blaha. He's a member of the European Parliament. He represents Slovakia. Does so with pride, I think, at least based on the conversations that we've had. Yeah. So good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, Ricky. And this is a really good opportunity to be in Russia and be in Moscow and be in your TV. Really.
Yeah, has anybody prepared you with certain questions? No, we can talk about anything, right?
Absolutely.
I just want you to know that we don't do the news here like they do on CNN.
No, be free.
There's no rules.
Yeah, no rules, definitely. I'm happy to answer everything.
All right, so let's talk about the stuff that's going on in the news right now. First of all, the situation in Hungary. So, Orbán's out, and this new guy, Peter Mudyard's in. Interesting, one of the first things he does is he has this tirade. The guy's brand new, and he's fighting with these journalists, and he's saying, I'm going to cancel you. Take a watch. Yeah. This is, by the way, in Hungarian, but maybe you can understand it. But you can tell that they're going after each other. Watch this.
Bocsánat, ön olyan embereket idéz, akiknek semmilyen relevanciájuk nincsen.
Azt mondta, hogy egyelőre nem időszerű, és most le is
még egyszer mondom,
le is vették most napirend.
Ön félrevezeti az embereket.
Én nem vezetem félre, ez elmondta, ott volt a híradásokban, nem csak
de
a miénkben. A zöld párti képviselő
de neki nincs
arról beszélt, hogy egyelőre...
Azt mondja, mintha Toroszkai László mondanám, valami, semmilyen hatásköre nincs a dologban.
Rendben, de ezért ne velem vitatkozzon, én csak azt tudom mondani, amit elmondtak az európai
parlamenti képviselők.
Nem a propagandát nyomom, az Európai Bizottság így reagál, vagy az Európai Európai Parlament tegnap így reagált erre. Én felteszem a kérdést önnek ezzel kapcsolatban.
Egy perce ön... állít egy hazugságot, és nem hagyja, hogy válaszoljak. Megengedi, hogy válaszoljak?
Én nem állítok egy hazugságot.
Megengedi, hogy válaszoljak?
A híradóban, ez lement. Azt kikérem magamnak.
Több mint egy perce beszél szerkesztő asszony, másfél év után jutottam be ide közben.
I mean, they're going after each other. And what's interesting thing, not only did he go after her, and you could tell that this was very antagonistic, but then he also said he was going to cancel the public news network in the country. And then he also came out later and said that if Netanyahu comes to Hungary, he's going to be arrested. What do you make of this guy?
You know, the funny thing is that in Slovakia, we had, for 2 years, very pro-European and anti-Russian government. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was the opposition politician, opposition MP, and I was not allowed to be in the public TV because I was in opposition. But nobody cared. Nobody cared in the Brussels, nobody cared in the European Union.
Interesting.
Then we came into the government, I mean, Mr. Fico's government, and we started to try to, you know, reform the public TV, just to reform it. It was like a reaction from the Brussels, like, oh, you are the monsters, you are the dictators, and something like this. Okay, now you can see Peter Magyar, who is, you know, a friend of Brussels, and he was for a lot, long time, you know, kind of agent of Brussels. Suddenly, nobody cares. He can, you know, attack the public TV. In Poland, Mr. Tusk, he attacked the public TV as well. Nobody cared.
So is the public TV in those countries pro-Brussels?
Now, yes.
Is it a tool of Brussels?
Now, yes, in Poland, yeah. Now, in Poland, and it's not problem with this, because he had the opportunity, I mean, Mr. Tusk, and now Mr. Magyar, to attack anybody in the TV. It's no problem, because the only problem is if you have not following the line, the propaganda of Brussels, propaganda of the European Union. Mm. At the time, you cannot do anything. So, you know, Peter Magyar, he was in this election campaign. He was the agent of the Brussels. The truth is that Mr. Szijjártó, as a foreign minister of Hungary.
Yes, I know
and
him.
Also
I've interviewed him.
Mr. Orbán, as a PM of Hungary, they were bugged. They were bugged and listened to their conversations with Mr. Lavrov.
No.
This is the situation in the European Union. And nobody cares. Nobody cares, you know.
Why don't we know about that?
This is just terrible. Because, you know, the information in this leaked information was good for campaign of Mr. Magyar. So nobody cared. If in Slovakia the opposition leader is bugged, it would be scandal.
So let me ask you something. Well, so let me ask you something then. Yeah. Does Brussels control the Times of London? Do they control the BBC, France 24, Le Monde? Are they all kind of owned by Brussels, by the EU?
I think that there is intelligence. There are spies. There are secret agencies. I think there is a
cooperation. There are people planted in those journalistic entities?
Absolutely, absolutely. Everything is conspired because, you know, Brussels, Berlin, and Paris, they are on the same line. They are cooperating on this. And if there is a problem with Hungary for a long time, because Mr. Orbán, he was there, he has been there maybe for 16 years, and always he wanted to defend the sovereignty of Hungary. And this is a problem. Mr. Fico in Slovakia, he has the same problem. Yeah. Because he wants to be free, he was a sovereign country, he wants to have a peace with Russia. And that's why he's the enemy of the state. He was almost murdered. My prime minister, he was almost murdered by the opposition activist.
Fico.
Because he wants to have a peace. He's a pragmatic. He wants to cheap energy from Russia, so he is the enemy of the state. This is the situation.
And then they say, I'm propaganda. They do. I
mean, everybody is propaganda.
Everybody's propaganda except for them.
Enemy of the state, you know. It was in this totalitarian regime, it's typical. If you have different opinion, you are the enemy of the state. Only because you have the different opinion. So this is not a democracy. This is a totalitarian regime. Only with more, you know, marketing and more clever PR strategy. But this is the totality.
I watched something else this morning. You know, Nebenzia, Vasily Nebenzia, who represents Russia. He's an old salty dog, guy. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been a guest on this show before also. I found him fascinating. Colorful guy, by the way. And today they released something that he said at the United Nations where he just went off. And he had Kaja Kallas right in front of him. And he basically said, look, Europe wants a war with Russia. Not because it's necessary, not because we want them, but because it's the way they make money from the military contractors. They need to make weapons. It's the only way they can sustain themselves. Here he is talking about that. Listen.
There is Ms. Kallas's ultimatum, a list of absurd demands for Russia without which the EU will not allow Kiev negotiate a peaceful settlement with Moscow. Essentially, European officials are rejecting the very idea of a diplomatic resolution and are openly promoting war.
Look, Russia's not faultless. Russia has its own problems. But this idea that Russia, the biggest country in the world, with more resources than every country in the world, hydrocarbons, timber, you name it, needs what? France?
Oh.
Seriously, I mean, I'm not here to apologize I'm not here to represent Russia, but I will tell you this. It doesn't make any sense to me that Russia would want to invade Europe. Why the hell would it want to invade Europe? Europe is a mess.
Yes. This is just a pretext for militarization of Europe. And this is very dangerous because, you know, after the Second World War, Germany was without army. And suddenly, Germany is, there is such military rise, like in the Hitler times. Really, Germany is investing so many expenditures to the military
500
complex.
Billion in the next 10 years.
When I see the company Rheinmetall, it was at the time of Nazis. It was the Goering's company. Suddenly, Rheinmetall is one of the most richest military complex in the Europe or in the world.
Yeah.
Hey, this is just terrible. And suddenly, I'm listening to the propaganda in the West that because of Russian threat, it's the same narrative.
What Russian threat?
No threat. But it is the same narrative like in the 30s and 40s. The same narrative of Adolf Hitler. So, it is totally the same. But, just a pretext to militarize Europe. And this is terrible story.
But I understand. Okay, so you're not happy about the Russia going into Ukraine. Okay, I understand that, and I respect that. Yeah. That's an opinion. So if that's your reason for saying that Russia now wants to take over the world, wouldn't you then be going after the United States?
Yeah.
How about Israel? I mean, in the time Russia has attacked one country, my country, the United States, has attacked six.
But this is so untrue. You know, it was Americans and it were Americans and Europeans and the West who were coming to the Russian borders. It was not Russians on the American border or on the border of the Canada or Mexico. So this is just false. This is just untrue. And I think that there is a lot of hypocrisy, as you said, you know. Americans and Israelis are doing the war crimes, really war crimes. They are killing the young children, young girls in the Iran. They are making raging genocide in Palestine. Yeah. They are making the war crimes in Lebanon. But nobody cared. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if there is a conventional war in Ukraine, because the West were trying to reach Russian borders, and Russians were trying to say to Western partners for years, for decades, like, this is our red line. Don't do this. No. The Americans were so arrogant that they were trying to reach the Russian border with Ukraine. Ukraine, everybody knows, from Brzezinski, from all the scholars, that Ukraine is really a tough point for Russians. It's about their existence. It's about their history. It's about their identity. No, nobody cared because they are so arrogant. But probably they needed a pretext to go to the war with Russia. This is mastermind. This is not like, coincidence. They wanted to do this. They wanted to have the war with Russians.
Yeah, and they paint themselves as a defensive organization, speaking specifically of NATO. And when you go back, I mean, you bombed Belgrade, you bombed Iraq, you bombed Libya, you bombed Syria. I mean, do you have a mirror in your house? Can you look at yourself and see what you've done before you go around criticizing others? Here's the Belgian, speaking of Belgium, Belgian Armed Forces Chief, actually saying what you were just saying, but he's admitting it. For him, it's all about they got to get ready for attacking Russia. Here's his 10-year plan. Take a listen. Okay.
2030 is going to be a difficult time for Europe. By then, the war in Ukraine, we hope, will be over. Russia will be there with its army of 650,000 to 700,000 seasoned troops. So, in 2030, we must be able to tell Vladimir Putin that even without the Americans, he will not win the war against Europe. We still have a few years ahead of us, thanks to the courage and blood of the Ukrainians, who are buying this time for us. That's why we support them so strongly.
He will not win the war against what war?
This is just terrible.
What is this guy talking about?
I'm so afraid about such guys because, you know, this is the typical narrative in European Parliament as well. Like, hundreds of people are talking about the Russian threat, about the new war, but they are not thinking that this escalation can bring us to the age of the nuclear war. It can be a third world war. We need the negotiations with Russians. We need to have the dialogue. We need to have the diplomacy. But such guys, they just want to have a war, militarization. And you know what is said?
European Union, it started as a project of welfare state, of social state, of redistribution, of kind of help to the working class people. Yeah. Suddenly, it's kind of a military project. It's kind of like in the Nazi times, like only the militarization, only the expenditures for army, and, you know, we need to cut the money for the poor people, for the poor regions like Slovakia is, yeah, and so on, because we need a big army to fight Russians. And you can see that in Iran, in Israel, there is a, I mean, in Palestine, yeah, there is a war, big war of Americans. Nobody cares in Europe, because we need to have a fight with Russians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This exactly.
And they are so isolated.
The Americans kill, burn alive 120 exactly. little girls.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't look.
Yeah,
don't look.
Definitely.
But, you know,
such a hypocrisy. Such
one
a hypocrisy.
Bomb falls on someplace in Ukraine, yeah, and
some
you
breach.
Know,
and yeah, it's a war crime. Some breach is burned down. It's a war crime. But the school, yeah, with the children, you know, I have in my home, I have three children, and one is a girl, 10 years old. I can imagine in Iran, in this school, such girls were yeah, you know, martyred by Americans. Nobody cares. In Brussels, Mrs. Metsola, she is the spokesperson, or I mean speaker of the European Parliament. She stood up
yeah,
and said, Iran is bad. She said, after this murder, mass murder, she said nothing about the Americans, nothing about war crimes.
It's crazy.
She said, Iran is bad. I'm so ashamed by European Union. I am so ashamed.
What's it like for you? I mean, you got to sit in there and talk to these. Do you have any kind of coalition that backs you, or are you like a lone wolf there?
Oh, well, there are some people who can speak about peace, but still the big majority of either liberals, either conservatives, either social democrats, so-called social democrats, because they are not social democrats anymore. They are supporting this Russophobia. They are supporting this militarization. And I'm very, very ashamed of this. Really, with the exception of the countries...
Ashamed, yeah.
With the exception of the countries like Slovakia, now Bulgaria, I'm happy for their elections, yeah, before Hungary, with these exceptions of these countries, all the countries are following this line. I mean, this war machine, and this is very dangerous for
you. You know what I have found interesting? I don't know if you have too, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm wondering, when you've been to Russia a few times, yeah, probably, when you come here and you go out in Moscow and you go in St. Petersburg and you talk to Russian people, do you find that they hate Americans or hate Europeans? Oh, no. Do you hear them saying the very negative, nasty things about Europeans and Americans that you hear from Americans and Europeans regarding Russians?
Even definitely not. And even they are not talking bad only about Ukrainians. No, it's not about.
That's
not
true.
Like this.
That's actually
it's not like
true.
This.
Yeah.
The Russian nation is one of the most intelligent and well-educated nations in the world. You cannot see in the world like people are a bus driver is reading the Dostoevsky or Tolstoy. It's yeah, nothing like probably in America or in Europe.
Right.
No. And this is such wise and
in America we just watch soap operas. Yeah.
Such intelligent nation. It's not about hatred. It's a different mission. It's a mission of, you know, a kind of identity of Russia is so strong. It's about family, it's traditions, yeah, about big stories, you know, and the West, I mean, the America and the Western Europe. It's about the commerce. It's about, you know, yeah, just shopping, yeah, and looking, watching these soap operas and this kind of, you know, progressive, so-called progressive ideas like LGBTI and so on. This is not really, really good, I think, for Europe.
So we in need many ways, the people of Europe who act that way, because I when I vacation in Europe, not last summer, the summer before, my son got married in Italy. So my wife and I decided we flew into,
country, yeah,
I think, Frankfurt, and we drove through Germany and then Switzerland and everything. Just loved it. What a beautiful place. Europe is one of the most beautiful, yes, places in the world when you drive through it. But we did talk to a lot of the people, and we did get the sense that they're trained, taught to, from birth, yeah, hate Russia.
They're indoctrinated, definitely. Very, very.
Well, that's so weird.
Well, you know, the truth is that in history, for our perspective, I mean, from perspective of Slavic countries, I mean, Slovakia, for example,
yeah,
the Russians or Soviet Union was our liberator from fascism. But for Germany, it was, you know, the country which defeated Germans. In Italy, it was the country which defeated Italian. So it's a different story. In the Second World War, I mean, these countries, these Western European countries, they were fighting Russians and they were losers. So,
yeah,
and this complex is still there. They hate Russians. They hate Slavic nations. You know, maybe this fascism is over. I mean, in this old-fashioned mode. But still, it's somewhere there. It's somewhere there. That's why they will hate Russia forever. And this indoctrination is continuing. And I'm very sorry for this, because I will always like Russians. I will always glise.
Just people.
Yeah.
They're just like anybody. The Russians are a lot like any. There's no difference between any of us anywhere in the world.
And we need them. We need them, because
because they have cheap energy, so we need them for economy.
Right.
And they are you know, nuclear power, so we cannot just ignore it. They are our neighbors, so we need to cooperate in some way. They will not throw away, you know, when we will cooperate with them. So that's why we need Chinese, we need Russians, we need all the world to cooperate. Not we are just waging the wars, cultural war against Russia. This is the first time, and then the military war.
I had an interesting conversation. As you know, I spent the weekend in Minsk. Yeah. And what a beautiful place, by the way.
One of the most beautiful cities because it's so clean.
And green. Yeah. I was like, what the hell is this? Yeah. You know, yeah. I was expecting some old Soviet-style city, you know, gray and walking around.
Colorful, beautiful.
It's colorful, bright, and it's wonderful. Speaking of colorful, their president, Mr. Lukashenko. I spent like 2 hours talking to this guy.
Yeah.
Has an interesting take on a lot of things. I asked him, because everybody says he's a dictator, right?
No, he's not.
So he really made me think about what is a dictator. And I asked this question at the end when I finished my piece. If you get a chance, you should watch it. I asked the question, just because he's been in office, does that automatically make him a dictator? Or is the fact that he's been in office for 30 years show that there are enough people in the country who are okay with him being there? So here's what he said when I asked him about his dictatorial role.
Okay.
Take a listen. Are you a dictator? Do you see yourself as a dictator?
I'm not, by no means. I don't have the kind of resources it takes to dictate. President Trump has the resources, and he dictates his terms to Venezuela and Cuba, your place of birth. He tries to dictate his terms to Iran, to China, and to varying degrees, to all countries. You talk about some kind of democracy and human rights, but it's all just chatter. Your policies in Venezuela, threats to Cuba, and your wars in the Middle East, among other things, show that you are true dictators. You're not Democrats. There is no democracy or human rights. Listen, what human rights? If you bomb a school, let's say a school in an independent sovereign country located thousands of kilometers away from you that pose no threat to you, and children and teachers die, nearly 200 people. And how many lives have been lost because you encourage bombings by Israel? You're willing to bomb, break, and destroy without regard to human rights. That's the essence of a dictatorship. We have 100 times more real democracy and real human rights than you do. What human rights can you discuss if you're killing people? You kill a person, what right does he have? He's dead.
You know what he's saying? He's saying, you say I'm a dictator, you're a dictator.
Yeah,
you're American, you're a dictator.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you make of that?
He's true. He's a very intelligent and a very well-respected person. I mean, Mr. Lukashenko. And, you know, in America, you have two parties. They are like Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola. Slavoj Žižek said it once. It is like Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola. There is no difference at all.
Maybe
very small difference. Okay, and this is not a dictatorship. It's kind of oligarchy.
Yeah.
Because both parties are founded by some oligarch, millionaire, and so on. So definitely there is no change. No change.
No.
And now you can see. Israel. Is it a democracy? They are killing the little children. They are killing, women. They are killing the
It's
people.
Not a democracy if you're a Palestinian.
Definitely.
It's a democracy if you're an Israeli
funny thing
or if
is
you're
that,
Jewish.
But Belarus is a dictatorship. Cuba is dictatorship. Everything is China is Russia is everything is dictatorship. But Saudi Arabia is all right. Saudi Arabia is a poor democracy. Or Dubai, they are Democrats. This is funny. They have no elections in Iran. You had normally the elections. Conservatives and liberals were clashing very very hard in elections in Iran.
Yeah.
But Iran is no democracy. The democracy is only you know the allies of the West. Because if you follow the United States and the Western centers, then you can do whatever you want in your country. You can killing the people. You can kill the people like Israel in Palestine. But if you are not following the line, you need to be dictator. Mr. Lukashenko is a very respected man. I will be happy to go to Belarus to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, no other nations suffered so much as Belarus people in Second World War. It was like 30% of their population who died in this war.
No question.
This is just.
Anybody out there listening, read the history of World War II and how the Nazis went through Minsk.
Exactly.
And 2.5 million people were slaughtered, massacred, killed.
You know,
not because they were Jewish, because they were Slavs.
Exactly.
It
was a genocide. Like there is a day of genocide of Soviet people. I mean, now in Moscow, I was trying to to celebrate or to make some respect for these people who died. But, you know, now the grandsons of these Nazis are you know...
Yeah, in charge. Kaya Kallas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they are trying to expose Belarus like a dictatorship, like the bad guys. You know, they should be like on this knee and trying to ask for forgiveness for all the crimes which they made.
Yeah, and by the way, Lukashenko's not perfect. And, you know, he explains, yeah, I arrested some of these people. I don't agree with the fact that he arrested some of his opposition. But he said, Rick, they were on the phone talking to London. They were on the phone talking to Paris. They were on the phone talking to Berlin. So they're talking to other governments about taking my government down. I'm sorry, I'm not going to allow that.
I will tell you.
Is he right?
If Mr. Lukashenko has not been there for these many, many years, Belarus would be the next Ukraine. It would be war zone.
Yeah, he told me that.
It would be war zone.
He told me that.
It would be like, because the West...
He said, you know what he said to me? He said, I'm not their son of a...
He's defending his country because it would be Maidan there. It would be a mess. And then the Western NGOs, Western media, Western intelligence were there.
Yeah.
And then they would use Belarus to attack Russia, as they are doing the same in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And the Russians are not stupid. The Russians know what they should do. So Mr. Lukashenko is the savior of Belarus. I think the people would be dying, like in Ukraine now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only chance to have normal relations with Russia, to respect that the Belarus and Ukraine should be a kind of, you know, neutral zones, neutrality. Remember Finland. Finland in the, after the Second World War.
Yeah, wanted
there was
to stay
a process of finalization.
Yeah.
Even Mr. Brzezinski, who is definitely not a friend of Russia, he said after Maidan, this is not good for Ukraine. They need some kind of finalization because they need to have pragmatic relations with the Europe and with the Russia. But no, we need it. I mean, the Brussels and Washington, they needed to have a war with Russia, and they misused Ukrainians for this. This is a really sad story because the Ukrainians are dying.
Yeah.
And we don't want to have this. We in Slovakia, we want to have a peace in Ukraine, to peace with Russia. But this is the Western military machine which is trying to make the war with Russia, and it's really not good.
And they do go into these countries, and they instigate, and they plant people, and they perform coups, and they start... these color revolutions. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell whether the people are really organically angry at their government, which they have a right to be, or whether they're only doing this because they're being manipulated or paid.
Yeah.
And you keep reading that most of the time, it's instigation and manipulation.
Yeah, yeah. But still, you know, it's funny that somebody believes that it's the West who is the good guy or the West who is the good subject. You know, after the war in Iraq, in Yugoslavia, in Syria, in Afghanistan, now in Iran and Lebanon and all the countries around Israel, the kidnapping of the Venezuelan president, you know, the blockade of Cuba, it's a kind of, you know, starvation there because of the Americans.
Yeah.
But the Americans and Israelis are the good guys.
Right.
And the bad is China is bad. China is bad. China didn't wage or haven't waged any war since 1979 when I was born. And there was a small war in the Vietnam border and nothing else. So China is without any wars.
Yeah.
And Americans, because of American wars, maybe like dozens of millions of people died because in 50 years.
Vietnam?
In 50 years,
Vietnam.
Yeah. Even before, even more. Yeah.
It's a perfect example.
They are good guys. They are good guys. So...
And by the way, America doesn't win any of these wars. They just fight them.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to be there for 10 years, and we're going to and some people are going to make a hell of a lot of money from those wars.
Yeah.
And that's really the problem.
And now I'm really proud on Iranian people now. Okay, Iran.
Wow.
Iran. Okay, has the regime which is maybe not perfect, of course.
Yeah.
But still, they are so, you know, so strong and so
where's
tough.
Europe on that? Where is Europe? I mean, if they're going to be so angry at Russia for Ukraine, why the hell aren't they every day right now angry at the West or at America and
like
Israel?
It's always like this.
Because what America's doing in Iran is much worse than what is happening in Ukraine.
But this was the same in Yugoslavia.
You know how many civilians have been killed in Ukraine in that war? Between 13 and 15 million, 1,000.
That's
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we can see what the Israelis are doing in Gaza. In
100,000.
Yeah, this is
in Iraq. 750,000.
Even more. Even maybe more afterwards. You know. But this is this typical hypocrisy of the Americans and Israelis. You know. Remember, or Brussels, remember Yugoslavia. When Yugoslavia was bombed because of Kosovo, then Kosovo was succeed from Yugoslavia, and nobody cared. Like, Germany was first to, you know, recognize Kosovo. Suddenly, there was a situation in Crimea. The Crimean, they choose to be the part of the Russia. Oh, it's the biggest war crime, biggest crime in the history. Why? You did the same to Kosovo. So somebody maybe teach a lesson. I think that... Brussels is the master of hypocrisy in this world. And that's why I'm so ashamed, because, you know, Americans, now the Donald Trump, I really don't like this guy. He promised before the elections that he will be the peace president, and he...
I voted for him.
I would maybe vote for him, but I would...
But that's not what I voted for.
Yeah,
it's like my friend Tucker just said this morning. He said, I'm sorry I made people vote for this guy.
He's war criminal. He's definitely war criminal. Venezuela, Cuba, Iran, and Iran before.
What do you think of this story today that I just put in my monologue with the Marines essentially seizing commercial ships? But that's an act of war. That's an international war crime.
Exactly. They have been doing this in Caribbean Sea for months, and they are killing the fishermen.
There it is. But they bombed a civilian vessel.
Definitely. This is, you know,
in open waters.
This is. They don't mind anything. They are just like you know, gangsters, like mafia gangsters.
So here's the question. So they're doing this. You know, it's questionable, and the whole world is looking at it. Iran seems to be the winner in all of this.
Definitely.
And I don't think there's any way that the United States is going to be able to shake that position away, because it's the Persian Gulf, and they're Persians. They control that Gulf now and will continue to control it. So in the end, how will this, do you think, play out for China, for Russia, for Iran, for those Gulf Coast countries, and for Europe? Give me your assessment.
I think that the only chance for Europe can be that we need to create kind of counterbalance against this American imperialism. So we need to cooperate with Russians, we need to cooperate with Chinese, because the only chance for the world, and I'm now following the American scholar Kenneth Waltz, you need a balance. You need a balance. Without balance, you have never in the history can be a peace. So we need, you have the strong United States with their imperialism, so we need to counterbalance it. European Union or European politicians were very good in this. Remember Charles de Gaulle. He was, one day he was with Americans, one day he was with Russians.
Yeah.
The same Willy Brandt.
Well, that's good. Sometimes the Russians are wrong.
You need to be pragmatic.
Sometimes the Americans are wrong. Sometimes the Chinese are wrong.
But look at Europe now. Europe is now just, you know, kind of a puppy dog for United States. Like, because we are dependent on energy, dependent on economy, dependent on security, on everything, you know? So for Donald Trump, we are just like, you know, ridiculous partners. So we are slaves for him. And the only chance for us is to cooperate with Chinese and Russians to counterbalance. But not. The Europeans now are trying to fight Chinese, fight Russians, fight everybody.
Yeah.
And we are isolated. Right. And, you know.
And Donald Trump is giving you the finger.
Yeah, exactly.
They're kissing his butt, and he's saying, keep kissing. I'm not interested. I don't like you.
And we need the realpolitik. I don't think that we need to be Russia lovers forever.
No.
We need to be pragmatic. We need to have the realpolitik, like Willy Brandt, like Charles de Gaulle.
Look at the lesson, I think, that's going to come out of this with the Persian Gulf countries.
Yeah.
They gave everything to the U.S. They're 100. Yeah. And look, how's that going?
Yeah, definitely.
How's that going?
Definitely. But I think that this energy crisis, it will be very hard also for the European Union. Now we have the big economic crisis because of this. And even if tomorrow the Hormuz is open, even if tomorrow it is open, still it is a half year when the energy prices will be again the same like it was before. So this is just tragedy for the European Union. But we are not doing anything. Anything.
I've kept you here longer than you. You've been so gracious with your time. And I don't want to keep you much longer. So let's end with you. What's it like for you working in what would seem to me to be an antagonistic environment? How do they treat you?
Well, they hate us. They think that we must be, you know, Russian spies, Russian agents and propagandists. You know,
can you have a conversation with them like we're having now, or no?
No, they are not using the, you know, the reason. No, nothing like this.
They won't even listen to you.
Maybe. I like, in many ways, communist regime, the regime, socialist regime before, because in many areas it was really better than capitalism. But still, in such some areas it was really bad. In 80s, in Soviet Union there was, you know, this Congress of the highest Soviet, and there was, you know, all these hundreds of these apparatchiks, and they were coming to this stage and saying in the paper they had written you know, some declaration, and there was like blah 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 blah, and everybody was uploading, everything is good. The same story is now in the Brussels. The same story is now in the European Union. These people are not using their reason. They are just reading their papers, like European Union is the great, and Russia is bad, and China is bad.
You want to find KGB? Go to London.
Yeah.
They're knocking on people's doors and saying, Did you post this on social media? Oh, okay. Come with us. You're going to jail.
In Germany?
It's happening
Germany,
all the time.
In Germany, the intellectuals and, the, you know, very well-respected scholars in German universities, they are criticizing, of course, the Israeli genocide against Gaza. They are just firing out from the universities only because of their criticism, only because of their opinion. This is the freedom and democracy of European Union. I see much more freedom and democracy now in Russia. I see much more democracy everywhere.
Do I. So
this
do
is
I.
really not good.
Yeah.
You know, I am one of example. In my country, I was... you know, scientific worker in Slovak Academy of Sciences for decades. Suddenly, because I have I wrote some books about Lenin, Marx, Che Guevara, and some you know, criticism against the American imperialism, I was fired out. Now I will be teaching in MGIMO, in the Russian university, very well known, very well respected. I'm very proud on this because Russia is more free than, you know, European Union, and this deep state in the European Union is very, very strong, like it was in United States. This is, I think, the only idea of Donald Trump, which I would like to follow. Yes, there is a deep state also in the European Union, and this deep state is very, you know, neoliberal, is very militaristic, and it's very Russophobic, like it was during the Nazi era.
Yeah, and they control these guys. The Starmer, weak.
Yeah.
Macron, weak.
18% of support, Macron, 18% of support of French population, and he is Democrat, and Putin with the support of, I don't know, 70 or 80%.
That's what I'm saying.
He is dictator.
I agree. I came away from my conversation with Lukashenko thinking, you know, the idea that we need to change leaders every 4 years and that somehow makes us a democracy
is democracy.
Bull crap. Oh,
that definitely.
Nothing changes after 4 years. You get the same exact leadership because things are controlled above the president. Look at Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Trump is being basically told what to do by the neocons, the donors, and the prime minister of Israel.
And maybe, probably, especially by the prime minister of Israel.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody can be blackmailed by Epstein files, and probably it is about this, so he will wage the wars for Israel, and it is like this. This is the truth. He cannot be so irrationally that he is waging the war in Iran.
It's amazing.
It's just because
I hope it changes. Yeah. Look, the people of Europe are good people.
Yeah, definitely.
These are wonderful people who have a history, and they didn't ask for this, but that's what they're getting. Same as the people of my country. We're Americans are good.
I have many American friends,
hearted people,
including you.
and they're being, you know, they yeah, it's
I'm
tough.
Sorry for this. You know, I am.
I'd like to see it change. The world should get along.
I love American culture. I love American books. I was writing a lot of books about the American scholars, even Mersheimer, even Jeffrey Sachs, and the critics, Noam Chomsky, critics of America are, you know, Americans. I like them.
Yeah.
And also I love American heavy metal and the thrash metal. I really like American culture in many ways.
So you're a headbanger.
Yeah, I like metal. I was playing also in metal band, you know, before in Slovakia. But still, you know, it's not about the people. It's about the establishment. It's about the deep state. It's about these elites. And they are waging the
war. We're not criticizing a country.
Exactly.
I don't criticize the Israeli people. The Israeli people are good people.
Yeah.
People all over the world are good people. It's just that they're often led by men and women who are weak and allow themselves to be bought.
Definitely.
And that's unfortunately what happens.
Yeah, very true.
I could talk to you all day.
Thank you very
much. You really are a good guy, and you're a smart man. And I wish there were more of you.
Thank you.
Because not because everybody has to think like you or me, but there should be more diversity of thought.
Yeah,
and you bring it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. And good luck to Russia. And really, really, Slovakia is a friend of Russia. And I wanted to tell it because many Russians are listening to us.
Well, if you get a chance to talk to Mr. Fico, tell him that I'm looking forward to having an interview with him.
Yeah, I will tell him. Okay.
I think
a great guy.
We'll maybe get along as well as Mr. Lukashenko and I got along, which was not good at the beginning, but then it ended up okay. I want to show you something. Okay. You ready? Watch this. So, this weekend, after I spoke with Lukashenko, I held a news conference. Yeah. They asked me to hold a news conference. I didn't do it. I'm not that egotistic. But they asked me if I would take some questions. So they brought the media, and the media started asking me questions. And somebody asked me what we talked about. What do you think of Mr. Lukashenko and the fact that he is accused of being a dictator? So I said, look, he's not a dictator. Because in many ways, that's a word that's falsely used, and it's overused. And then I went on to say, if Mr. Lukashenko is a dictator, then I'm the Queen of England. Well, on Twitter, they went crazy. This thing has already gotten more than 20 million views, and people all over Twitter started creating a meme of Rick Sanchez as the Queen of England.
You want to see the pictures?
Yeah, that
will. I'll show them to you together. Here's we got a couple of them anyway. Here's the first one. Here's Rick Sanchez wearing baby blue. What do you think? No?
Great.
Here's Rick Sanchez, I guess, as the dwarf queen. Oh, I like this one. Look at that. There I'm kind of like a queen and a king, and I don't know what the hell I am. These are all put together by people all over the world, and they put them on Twitter. And finally, there I am.
Oh, yeah.
From now on, I want you to refer to me as Your Highness.
It would be great for England if you are going to be Queen of England.
People killed me, and it's good. I'm glad.
That is good.
Often what we do here is we read all the criticisms that people write about me.
Yeah.
So, as usual, all the feedback is appreciated. You can criticize me. You can criticize him. It's perfectly fine. This is all fair game. Check out my social media. We're on X. We're on Spotify. We're on BitChute. We're all over the place. Thanks so much for being with us. And more importantly, as I always like to say, thank you for letting us into your homes. See you next time.